Hey, welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast. What follows is a live YouTube stream that we did Friday, July 31st. It covers three news events, major news events that you need to be aware of. You're not going to get these sorts of takes and these sorts of angles, this sort of framing from anywhere else because, you know, it's all monolithic out there. So you need to hear this angle, the reality angle. The three topics are surrounding the Pochettino rehiring here at US Soccer. The second topic is surrounding this whole FIFA fiasco, you know, where they're going to create this subsidiary to commercialize all of the FIFA properties and receive private investor money for that. And the third deals with this viral video that MLS marketing team put out that had fans of an MLS game mic'd up and how cringe that shit was and what it actually means. What does it prove? Obviously, we also fielded a bunch of audience questions, so you don't want to miss that. Here we go. For these live stream episodes, I'm going to keep the sponsorship very, very short. If you're a coach, you want to go to 343coaching.com. If you're a parent, you want to go to 343masterclass.com. And if you're coaching in the 7v7 environment, you want to go to 7v7coaching.com. It's the best coaching education that you could get here in the United States because it deals with pioneering work done here in the United States, where all you coaches know the environment is different. The environment here is not the environment that exists in Spain, in Holland, in Portugal, in Argentina, in Brazil, you name it. No, we have a unique soccer, youth soccer environment here in the States, and you need to learn from somebody who has done remarkable pioneering work in this space. So again, go to 343coaching.com for that. And parents, the same exact thing applies to you. But for you, you go to 343masterclass.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this live stream that we did on YouTube. And I should mention that you should go to the YouTube channel, subscribe and like our channel over there. And we're going to be live every single Monday, 5 p.m. Pacific time to cover topics of the week. Here we go.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of 343 Live. I'm joined by a legend, Gary Kleiben. Gary, thanks for hopping on.
How for sure, doing? Man.
How are you doing today, Gary?
I'm okay. I just had breakfast. I reviewed a little bit of the things that we wanted to talk about, although not a huge review. I think in the future, I want to be more prepared because if we're going to report on like news or related things or current events, I really want to be beefed up on it and not be improvising or just giving a hot take. You know, I want to be a little bit more informed.
There you go. So we'll make a big announcement at the end of the episode as to our future plans on doing more live recordings. But let's hop straight into it today, Gary. Let's talk about this man right here, Pochettino. Okay, and I'm going to bring up a tweet from, or do you call it an ex-post now, Gary?
I call it an ex-post, yeah.
Andres Cantor, pretty reliable source, no, Gary? He says, through reliable sources, I understand that Mauricio Pochettino renewal negotiations are going well and that the intention is to be able to announce it soon in order for him and his staff to start working on September, October, FIFA March dates. So Andres Cantor is a pretty reliable source, Gary. He wouldn't make this stuff up, no?
Sure. Look, he's Argentinian himself, even though he's been in the United States forever. We all know that. Mauricio Pochettino is Argentinian. He's interviewed Mauricio Pochettino, had a sit down with him. I'm sure they formed some sort of rapport. And all of us practitioners want to have, you know, distribution or media people that we know, like, and trust. Okay. So for me, it's not a surprise that Andres is kind of the one who broke this, if we can call it news, because he seems like somebody that Pochettino would trust, you know, common heritage, common language, long history, and which is very important. So I don't know what else you want to talk about, but yeah, I'm sure we want to dig into the whole Pochettino renewal. Is it good? Is it not good? Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Under what conditions could we speculate Pochettino would accept or not accept, et cetera? Or my comments, you know, from a month ago or whenever it was, and what I said was probably going on, but drive the ship.
Yeah, well, let's start there, Gary, with the episode that we recorded a month ago when Shirondolo got announced as the new 23 coach. And we were thinking that with this announcement, it was kind of a clear sign that Pochettino wouldn't be coming back, because if he was coming back, he wouldn't want Shirondolo as a U23 coach. And now this is what I heard on Tactical Manager show, that Pochettino was involved in the hiring of Shirondolo. Now, do we know if that's true or not? Hard to say. Okay. But let's start there, Gary. I mean, you thought after the announcement that it wasn't going to happen. And now it's looking like it is. But again, I want to make something very clear. It's not official until it gets signed. And it could still be a last minute thing of, oh, you know, at the last minute, both parties couldn't agree. So it's not official yet, guys.
Yeah. Let's give a brief recap of what we've been saying for months and months and months here, because it's important context and framing. Before the World Cup, I regularly said I didn't want the U.S. men's national team to be outrageously successful, meaning getting to like a semifinal, because that would further empower the establishment and enable them to further centralize control and power and their stranglehold or chokehold on soccer in this country, which is the cancer that plagues us in this country. Okay. So I didn't want them to be too successful. I also didn't want them to completely fail at the World Cup, because then the establishment would point the finger at the big bad foreigner, which is Mauricio Pochettino, and see you guys, this is why we need to have a local coach, an MLS coach, right, to run the national team, because clearly you all wanted the foreigner, the world-class foreigner over here. Well, we did you a favor when we got him, and look at what happened. You guys don't know what you're talking about. Shut the F up. We got to hire our local MLS boy, because he knows the American player. He knows the American culture. He knows the American league. And that's another mechanism by which they continue their cancerous chokehold on American soccer, by controlling the biggest microphone in American soccer, which is the national team manager's podium. And so my preferred thing to happen is somewhere in between success and ultimate failure, which is kind of where we landed, right? Is kind of in between success and failure, because then the establishment doesn't have a clear way of further centralizing power. And we would have a quote unquote, like a culture war between pro-establishment and anti-establishment or reformers as to how to move forward. And if you recall, Benny, the media, which is the instrument by which the establishment programs the fan base and the customers and the entirety of the ecosystem, the media was giving Pochettino a lot of flowers during the group phase. So much so, Ben, that it was hard for them to, after their exit to Belgium in spectacular fashion, for the media to then come out and say, Pochettino's the big bad foreigner, get rid of him. Even though they kind of tried, a few of them kind of tried. Who's the biggest Muppet that covers the national team? I forget his name. Oh, Doug McIntyre tried. He floated out, you know, tweets here, there, writings here and there. There's no way of defending, you know, bringing Pochettino back on after this thing. And what happened, Ben? A big percentage of the fan base, of the supporters, attacked Doug for saying such a thing. And so Doug is basically used as a puppet to float out ideas. Well, let's see how the fan base would react if we got rid of Pochettino or didn't bring him back on. And the fan base didn't really like that. And Alexi Lalas was another one who said a few things out there in the wild about Pochettino maybe not, shouldn't be coming back. And how did the fan base react? The fan base didn't kind of jump on that bandwagon and said, yes, let's get rid of Pochettino. So this is why I think, in large part, why it's still kind of a possibility for Pochettino to sign back on. Now, which brings us to your ultimate first kind of question here, and what I said previously, which was, oh, look, they hired, what's his name, Schrundelo for the U23 Olympic team merely 3 days after the World Cup ending. That's not a good sign, because any serious national team manager who wants a full cycle to work and wants to kind of change things for the better would want full control of the youth national team pipeline, of which the U23s is part of it, especially the U23s, because the U23s is going to have players of age that are going to be contributing or potentially contributing to the senior team. So you want control of that U23 setup. So when they came out and said, well, Schrundelo's the hired guy, which is an MLS puppet, and people take issue with that, but I don't care. You don't know what you're talking about. He's essentially an MLS puppet also. I'm like, okay, this is not a good sign, because why would Pochettino, you know, take on the job if that guy is the U23 coach? And yes, literally maybe a few days after I wrote that on X, and kind of everybody caught on, they're like, oh, that's a good point. And everybody kind of caught on to those coattails and said, yeah, that's a good point. Maybe Pochettino's not coming back as a consequence of this. A few days later, it got leaked or the narrative came out, oh no, Pochettino was part of the U23 hiring process. What a coincidence, Benny, that that happened after I said what I said.
Do you think that's true though, Gary?
I don't know. And just like all of these sorts of statements that can be made, there's a spectrum, right? On one end of the spectrum, it's, oh, Pochettino was made aware that we're hiring for the U23 thing and that we're going to be making a decision. So it could have been just like Pochettino's had an awareness. And on the other end of the spectrum is like, no, Pochettino basically picked the guy. So somewhere in between there is probably the reality.
So this whole thing, Gary, of now Pochettino potentially coming back, is this another instance of the Federation responding to fan pressure? I mean, you hinted at it a little bit, right? When Doug McIntyre sent out his tweet and then they go to the comments and see, oh, well, maybe this country actually does want Pochettino to stay. So maybe we should, you know, readjust our strategy. Or do you think this was the plan all along? Like they wanted to keep him after the World Cup.
They operate based on public perception. The Federation, which is corruptly controlled by Major League Soccer, let's not forget that critically important point, operates based off of public perception above anything else, above sporting integrity, above everything. So yeah, man, they had already set up the cards to in a win-win scenario, as far as I'm concerned, by leaking it that they had made an offer to Pochettino to stay on after the World Cup, that they had made that offer before the World Cup. Why? Because as I said then, it could have been the shittiest offer on earth such that Pochettino rejects it. And that's how they get rid of Pochettino and still look good, Ben, because they can always tell the public, we tried, guys. Look, it was reported. We made the guy an offer. He is the one who rejected us. We did not reject him. So they are good. They're sitting pretty. We tried. He rejected us. Nothing we can do about that. He's his own man. He's got other interests elsewhere. He didn't like the United States. He wanted to go. So they still make the big bad foreigner the scapegoat and they get off scot-free. Now, with Andres Cantor's recent reporting, yeah, that they're in negotiations. Well, interesting choice of words, right? Because clearly the offer initially was probably not sufficient to keep the guy. So they're negotiating. What would those negotiations entail? I don't know. It's probably not so much surrounding money, because money I don't think is an issue at all, never has been. It's probably about control. I control X, Y, and Z, or I'm out. Understandably so. And look, U.S. soccer still has that power, that win-win scenario. They could not give him what he wants, and then Pochettino's the one who rejects things, and they look good.
So no matter what, they're going to look good, Gary.
Pretty much.
All right, let me get to some of the audience comments, Gary. Pruto69 says, what does Poch renewing as USMNT coach mean for youth soccer and player development? Will it have any impact?
Okay, it'll make marginal impact. It won't make immediate impact. I'll tell you the mode by which, because I want to keep it positive. I want to give you positive spins, and then I'll give you the negative, okay? The positive spin, which I think is the most important role that the national team manager can play, is he has the biggest microphone in American soccer. He can say things and formulate narratives and launch narratives that are good narratives for the public to then reshape the way that they view football, period. Okay. For example, he can start talking about, hey, I don't understand why at the youth soccer situation, it's a closed ecosystem. So there's no pressure, real pressure, to develop players. There's no real pressure amongst all the clubs and all the coaches to do phenomenal work, so on. So imagine if he were to say something like that. That's critically, that will educate millions of people in this country about that core issue at the youth level. Another thing he can do is via the way the national team plays, I want you to think about the game against Paraguay. I want you to think about the game against Australia, right? I want you to think about those really good performances. That is what sets the stage for the remainder of the pyramid. It's like, oh, wow, that is how, that looks good. Clearly we can play that way. Our youth team should play that way too. So a lot of coaches could be inspired to play that way. And coaches will have the political capital to say, well, look at the national team. That is what we want to do. It is possible here. That is what's best for your kid. That is what's best for our youth club. So it could have some transformative marginal effect on playing style, which is good for player development then. And again, what he says before matches and after during press conferences, in breaking down matches, in talking about soccer culture, so on and so forth, that will leak into the minds of youth players, leak into the minds of youth parents, leak into the minds of youth coaches, which is a positive net effect versus the alternative. If you all remember Berhalter, what a shit show on playing, shit show in press conferences. The culture was, forgive the expression, retarded. Like, they're showing clips of him doing behind the back bounce passes of the soccer ball to players, and they're making a whole show about that. That's the kind of culture that 6 years of that shit established in the country. So yes, it could have good positive effects on youth soccer and player development, but it's marginal. We all know what the big boy is. The big boy is we need promotion, relegation, open ecosystem at the pro level. That is the only thing that will have a significant, real, lasting impact in magnitude and at scale of soccer in this country at the youth level, is having an open ecosystem at the pro level. Pochettino can't do that. But with narratives that he can establish, he can accelerate, right, the education of the public, which is the ultimate catalyst for having that sort of revolution at the top level.
Yeah, and I think when most people think about this question, right, they would say like, oh yeah, Pochettino can implement a style of play for all the youth, and this is exactly how to train the youth. But that's not going to have any impact, guys. It's not going to have any impact on anything. You're 100% correct. The only way to make a positive change would be to continue hammering that narrative that he already has proven that he will do. He said MLS, or American sports, rather, breeds losers. Guys, this is the only way that it will have any impact on the youth.
I'm glad you brought that point up, Benny, because I think that's where this person and others are coming from, right? Is like, can Pochettino deploy some sort of mandate that the whole youth system needs to operate this way? The youth clubs need to teach this stuff and do this or else. And unfortunately, that's just such a bad way of thinking about the world in general, not just soccer, is that some higher power, some higher authority should, by fiat, by decree, say, you must do this or else. And it seems like that is what a lot of people here, unfortunately, are kind of looking for. That's not going to happen. That can't happen. And it shouldn't happen. It is wrong for something like that to be done. And Pochettino can't do that anyway. You have no power over how Youth Club FC over here, 5 miles from me, is going to train their players.
Yeah. And the other thing that they'll say is, oh, well, maybe Pochettino can come in and, you know, rework the coaching education of the licenses in U.S. soccer. Again, guys, not going to have any meaningful impact.
Correct.
All right, let's move on from there. Let me just ask you straight up. I know the answer, but let's hear it for the audience. Do you want Pochettino to come back, and will this be the best thing for U.S. soccer moving forward? Or American soccer, I should say.
Yeah. I'm of two minds here, and I kind of try to put myself in a win-win scenario, like the Federation and the corrupt Federation, right? The MLS-controlled Federation. On the yes side, it's for all the things that are, you know, we already laid out, that I want him back because of all these potentially good things that could happen. The narrative infusion to the public over and over and over, the education infusion, which is critically important. On the flip side, let's say we got some sort of MLS Muppet or something. It's Schirandolo, you know, they gave him the U23 job so that, you know, while they look for a new senior team manager, maybe they make Schirandolo the interim senior men's national team guy, and he wins some games against the Caribbean islands, you know, and it looks good. And then they give him the permanent job, or they just hire another MLS puppet for the senior team. In that scenario, without Pochettino, I want to look at the glass half full, in the sense that, yes, it's going to be another shit show sporting-wise and another shit show like narrative-wise from that podium, but it now gives us a lot of ammunition when it goes to shit for all of us who know better to really drive home the point. See, it's all shit.
For the sake of the future of American soccer, I hope Schirandolo does not win the Olympics.
No chance.
All right. Shall we move on from Pochettino, Gary, or anything else that you want to remember? Like I told you before, again, it's not official. Do you think at the last second something could happen to maybe, you know, derail this move?
Well, what I said also in our other episode, where I was extremely skeptical that this guy's going to stick around, I also ended that episode saying, hey, but you never know, he could stick around for reasons that people aren't really considering, or most aren't really considering. Maybe he likes the United States of America. He wants his family in the United States of America. You know, he likes it here. It's cool. You know, it's for all, I don't have to reiterate why the United States of America is awesome compared to other areas in the world. Maybe he likes it and wants to stick around. So even if they don't give him all the control and the power that he wants or needs to do a good job, he'd be like, you know what? Fuck it. You know, this is a good situation. I'm getting paid well, so on and so forth. Another consideration is maybe his staff. You know, at this level, if folks don't really know, a head coach has his own technical staff. And for the most part, they usually are a team and they go wherever they go all together. So if Pochettino were to get the job at AC Milan or Newcastle or wherever, that whole staff goes with him. It's like one unit. So maybe his staff is of the same mind as him, and they have conversations like, yeah, we like it here, Poch. You know, let's just stick around. Well, let's do the project. You're in the United States. And his staff, I'm sure, is getting paid quite handsomely too. So it's not just the guy.
Right. It could be all of those factors.
So I don't know. Yeah, I guess is the question. I don't know what's going to happen.
If he does stay, Gary, do you think we'll see a completely different player pool? Like, does he want to start from scratch, right? Like all these entitled players that have been the A-team guys for the last 6 years. Is Pochettino done with them? Going to move on from them?
That's a very good question, Ben, because we should reiterate that Pochettino, with the 18-month runway he had to the World Cup when he came over, that is not sufficient time to do any significant work. And what I mean by that is restructuring the player pool. The player pool was established the prior 6 years. The guys were the guys. Whoever got elevated 4 years ago, 6 years ago, and 7 years ago, they got on this virtuous cycle using the national team platform, which enabled those players to play in Europe, to, you know, if things aren't going good in their club teams in Europe or elsewhere, well, they aren't going to disappear, because since they're senior men's national team players, some other top club in Europe will continue giving them shots and opportunities. So you keep having opportunities, and the more opportunities a player has, the more they establish themselves and solidify their careers to have longevity. And so the pool becomes the pool. It becomes ossified. So Pochettino comes in. This is the player pool. I can't really disrupt it. He tried. He went to fucking MLS to see if he can find a goddamn jewel, because the pool is shit. And people were having a cow that was going to MLS thinking that he was compromised by Don Garber and MLS. No, guys, the player pool that he inherited is shocking. And he's hoping that maybe he finds a diamond in the rough over here that he can build into something significant. So he tried. He tried a lot of MLS players. None of them really materialized as being good enough. So the player pool question, I would suspect that he would absolutely, in especially the first year, first 18 months, completely wipe the slate clean and maybe get 17, 18, 19, 22-year-olds in there who haven't really been given opportunity at that level, that platform, and see if he can do something with that. Because if he platforms the 17, 18, 19, 22-year-olds on the senior men's national team, that then catapults them over to Europe. And then by the time the next World Cup comes around, those players now have 2 years, 3 years of European experience under their belt. They become seasoned, and the player pool has now been restructured and overturned.
Let's hope so, man, because change needs to happen. And I can foresee an event similar to Klinsmann leaving Donovan off the roster, right? 4 years, Pulisic, yeah, he's still part of the pool, but then doesn't make the World Cup roster. And then there's all this outrage. Oh, Pochettino, what are you doing? Pochettino sacked.
Wouldn't that be great, Ben? The World Cup 2030 comes around. This guy, Pochettino's still in charge. And he's like, nah, Pulisic, you're out. Chop suey.
Done. All right, Gary, there's an audience comment that'll lead well into our next discussion here. Are we even going to have a World Cup 2030? UEFA possibly boycotting FIFA events, FIFA selling minority shares to outside investors. Spain and Portugal might do the same thing. Okay, guys, let's talk about FIFA here. Let me give you guys a timeline of events as what has happened in the last week here. So on Tuesday, right, the announcement was made. The media reports that FIFA's plan is to create FIFA Forward Enterprise, right, a $20 billion valuation, a subsidiary for commercial operational rights of major tournaments. The very next day, Gary, UEFA comes out and strongly opposes it, okay? The following day, on Wednesday, CONCACAF comes out, opposes it. Yesterday, we had U.S. Soccer resharing CONCACAF's post saying, we fully support you. We're going to get to why that's kind of backwards in a bit, okay? And then yesterday as well, UEFA had an emergency meeting. All of their members, 55-0, plan to boycott all future FIFA competitions unless the plan is fully abandoned with guarantees, okay? So that's a timeline of events for you guys. Gary, what are your thoughts on this whole thing? And yeah, start us off, Gary.
There's so much to say. Look, none of these things are a surprise to me anymore. I think I've shared on the podcast previously, when I was growing up, I was a kid, literally a kid, not even a teenager yet. And obviously throughout my teen years, around the dinner table with parents, friends of the family, all Argentinian, they were always talking about the corruption of FIFA. João Avelange was the FIFA president back when I was growing up. And then Sepp Blatter came in after that. But around the dinner table, I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And my ease is like corruption this, corruption that. They were talking about the controversies, the current events of the time. So I'm kind of been seasoned in this whole thing. So it doesn't, none of this is surprising in any way, shape, or form. The big problem here is that, look, we can talk corruption all day long. Is there corruption in FIFA? Yes. Is there corruption in the other federations, the 200 plus member federations? Yes, there's corruption everywhere. Nobody's immune from corruption. I'm extremely familiar with corruption here in the United States of America. The U.S. Soccer Federation is literally entirely corrupt. We can talk about that separately, more so than FIFA, mind you. So yeah, when you're bringing out private investors or bringing in private investors into the tent, that is yet another interest group that gets infused into this soup. And with that comes a lot of other modes of corruption. I mean, these people who would potentially own, I think what, they're saying 20% of this new entity or something like that. It doesn't matter that they're a minority shareholder. It doesn't matter that they wouldn't have voting, like total voting power in that entity. What matters is the relationship building that they'll have. What matters is the access that they will have with the people who do have voting power, with the people within FIFA committees, and how they could persuade those people to vote in certain directions and make certain recommendations. Why? Because these people are very powerful and very wealthy. It's not that they're going to literally bribe you. Here's $10 million under the table. Vote for this provision or proposition. You don't have to do that. It's all implicit. Do what I want you to do and you'll be taken care of. Yeah. I'm sure you saw that. I don't know whether it's true, it's not true. Who knows? You can't believe anything nowadays about Trump wanting Gianni Infantino to potentially be the new UN United Nations Secretary General. How did that come around? It came around because Gianni Infantino, being a bureaucrat, being a politician, running FIFA, had the opportunity to meet with Trump, spend time with Trump because the World Cup was over here. They formed a relationship. They like each other. He did what Trump maybe wanted, God knows what. And next thing you know, he's going to be in a outrageously powerful organization leading the United Nations. Yeah. So this is how power works, guys. So if you want to let a group of private investors, you know, own 20% of this new entity from FIFA, they can say, FIFA can say all they want that, oh, they have no sporting decision-making power. Yeah, they do through these other indirect influences. So good on UEFA supposedly rejecting it, even though UEFA saying that they'll reject it does not mean that all its members are going to reject it. Just because CONCACAF said, oh, we reject this whole thing or whatever, fuck, doesn't mean that all CONCACAF federations are also going, when they come down to voting, that they're going to reject it.
And Gary, back to the Trump thing. Who is the lead investor of this whole project? Okay. Josh Kushner. Who is Josh Kushner? Jared Kushner's brother. Who who is Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump's husband. Okay, so son-in-law. So it seems like Trump was in Infantino's ear a little bit during the World Cup, no? I mean, makes sense, right? Like, it's pretty easy to make that correlation when you see Trump's son-in-law's brother is now leading this charge to help FIFA.
Yeah, we need to, I'd like to think the audience is quite bright. I hope folks aren't so tempted to conflate, oh, it's because Trump bad, so all this happens. This happens in all halls of power. And just because something is reported and something isn't reported doesn't mean, right, that the other thing that's not reported isn't also happening. This happens everywhere all the time, red, blue, purple, pink, and orange. You know, it doesn't matter.
And also, nobody's really talking about what the benefits of this would be. I mean, imagine if you're a small country in Africa who has basically zero money to spend, and now all of a sudden you're given $20 million to invest into your youth system or your professional environment. Like that. So is there any positives to this, Gary?
That's always been one of the primary modes and things of criticism regarding FIFA corruption is that, like you said, these smaller federations, these less powerful federations, well, they still have voting rights in FIFA, in many cases equal voting rights. And so who's the most easily susceptible to corruption? To buy their votes. It's like, vote for this, guys, and this shipment of capital goes your way. Or vote for this, and this new position is yours to have. Or vote for this, and we will host the World Cup in your country. Or gun. You know what I mean, okay? So they're entirely susceptible to that. And yes, 20 million or whatever the number is that would get distributed to the federations. I think it's on the order of 20 million, if I'm not mistaken. Supposedly, right? Yeah, that could do a lot of good for those small federations or island nations or whatever. But the question is, would it actually be deployed appropriately over there? And interestingly enough, let's say the U.S. Soccer Federation got an infusion of 20 million. That 20 million is a joke for a federation like U.S. Soccer. And 20 million is a joke for other powerful federations around the world. So that isn't really that motivating, in my opinion, unless that money is going to be used for more nefarious things.
Do you think UEFA will hold true on their word to say, we're not going to compete in any FIFA events moving forward? Like, they're not going to play in the World Cup in 2030 or if this happens?
It's possible. Possible, Benny. Yeah, it's possible. Again, who stands more to lose? I don't have that answer because I'm not in those meetings, in those halls. It's hard for me to understand all the relationship dynamics and the money flow and what that looks like exactly. And I don't know, but I'll tell you this much. It draws a lot of parallels with the, you know, recurring European Super League theme that started surfacing up, 15 years ago, however long ago it was. And then it resurfaced again a handful of years ago. And by, the super clubs in Europe wanting to kind of break away and form their own super league. And what happened then? It's kind of the same mechanism. UEFA and a whole bunch of other countries said, okay, well, we're going to boycott this and boycott that. And that would shut down the super league, and the fans and the supporters would also shut down the super league concept. So it has a very similar taste here, Ben.
Let's go to an audience question. If a European hedge fund was the primary potential investor, would there be so much of an uproar?
I think so. I think so. Because again, if you look at the Super League, it's all European clubs that were going to break away and all European money that was going to break away.
All right, Gary, I know we're talking about FIFA here, but I want to continue to show some love to the audience. Let's bring up one question that has to do with USMNT. Middlesbrough finalizing deal to sign Max Arfstein. And I already signed Berhalter. Is it good for Americans to play in the EFL Champions for continued development?
Game. Benny, so we don't end the FIFA thing yet. Are you done with the FIFA thing?
I don't know. I mean, yeah.
No, because I want to say something that's very important.
Sure,
that illustrates a blind spot that many seem to have. A lot of MLS reporters, a lot of MLS journalists, and I put those things in air quotes always, a lot of MLS supporters and fans, same with the U.S. men's national team supporters and fans, they came out in strong opposition to this FIFA subsidiary being formed and all this happening. I find it quite hypocritical and ironic. And all the reasons that they gave against it, oh, the integrity of the sport and money's going to ruin things. Look, it's already ruined things with ticket prices and the expansion to 48 teams. And now when expanded to 64 and on and on and on, all the objections that we've all heard before coming from this particular demographic here in the United States. I find it extremely hypocritical because they then this coming weekend turn around or every day turn around and support MLS. MLS is effectively, in essence, practically speaking, this situation occurring to FIFA. MLS is a single entity. It's worse than the FIFA thing. Single entity, one company owning all of the first division of American soccer for their own gain at the expense of everybody else. And they try to destroy everything that is not MLS. They destroyed the NASL. They destroy good USL markets by coming in and helicoptering in a new franchise in those markets. They try to destroy USL, the second division, by forming MLS Next Pro to compete against them and destroy them. They try to destroy all the youth clubs and youth leagues by taking over youth leagues and compromising youth clubs and telling youth clubs, you need to obey us or else you cannot wear the MLS Next patch. And if you can't wear the MLS Next patch, it's only a matter of time before your neighbor over here, which has kissed our ring, takes all of your best players, takes all of your coaching, takes your fields, takes everything, and bankrupts you, all for the benefit of one company comprised of wealthy people, wealthy investors, many and most of which have nothing to do with football, and use it as their piggy bank. And not just for their piggy bank, but for other modes of acquiring power, political power, soft power, power in their adjacent businesses. Oh, how can I leverage Atlanta, the Atlanta community and all this stuff to prop up Home Depot even more? So exactly what they've been opposing, worse so in this FIFA thing, they are supporting in our country. So, okay, now we can move on to Sebastian Berhalter going to the English Championship.
Let me ask you one more question. So US Soccer coming out and saying, oh, we fully support CONCACAF and their opposition to this. Is this just virtue signaling, Gary?
I mean, you kind of, after you saw UEFA come out so strongly, after you saw CONCACAF come out, which is your confederation, after you saw the public here in the United States attack and not want this to happen, what did we say at the beginning of the episode? U.S. Soccer, which is corruptly controlled by MLS, operates solely, its primary objective is to control public perception. That's what they're most fearful of. So, of course, after all that stuff, of course, now they'll come out and say, yes, we support CONCACAF's rejection letter. They didn't come out with their own rejection letter, as far as I know. They didn't come out and write a one-page or two-pager saying why it's wrong, why it compromises sporting integrity, why it could potentially create more corruption modes. They didn't say anything. They were like, oh yeah, we're aligned with CONCACAF.
On their Instagram stories, Gary.
So a very soft thing that they did.
Yeah. I mean, you can't expect them to come out and say like, oh yeah, we fully support this, but it's just so hypocritical because of all the things that you laid out of what they allowed to happen in this country.
And again, all of this might have been orchestrated in many ways adjacently or directly by people in MLS, also the investors, the wealthy folks there, one way or another. And this could all be what they usually do, what power usually does, is throw out trial balloons and see how the public reacts to trial balloons. This whole thing, as serious as I'm sure it is, could still be viewed and used by the halls of power as a trial balloon. Let's throw this out there, see how people react, and then adjust accordingly. And then we'll circle back on this later or in a different way.
Yeah, let's make the FIFA World Cup a monopoly and nobody can earn their place into it. And we're only going to allow 30 countries every 4 years to compete.
Well, Benny, another thing. I'm glad you brought up the word monopoly. So FIFA has a monopoly on the World Cup. They have a monopoly on it. So any monopoly is extremely valuable. And people with a lot of wealth that they want to protect, they don't put their money in a bank like Chase or Bank of America or Wells Fargo, like all of us plebs do. Because if you do that, you don't grow your capital. On the contrary, your money loses value over and over, year over year over year. It's losing its value at 7% per year due to inflation, due to the printing of money. So they have to find shelters. And shelters are professional sports team. Shelters are fine art. Shelters are real estate. Shelters are those sorts of assets. Gold is a shelter. Another shelter. FIFA has a monopoly. Can we find a way such that we get a piece of that monopoly? Again, is a shelter.
All right, Gary. You ready for Berhalter?
Okay, Sebastian Berhalter, let's bring on the most important topics.
I want to show some love to the audience.
Yeah.
They're here on a Friday. We appreciate you guys. All right, Marquise Le, here's your question. Middlesbrough finalizing deal to sign Max Arfston and already signed Berhalter. Is it good for Americans to play in the EFL Champions for continued development?
Absolutely. Anywhere in Europe is better than in MLS. It has to do with competitive level. And people get this wrong as to what competitive actually means, okay? Competitive does not actually mean how good are the Seattle Sounders player for player. Because the Seattle Sounders player for player, they might be very good, but each player isn't going 100% in every training session and 100% on the weekend, every weekend for the entire season, because there is nothing really at stake relative to the rest of the world. So the intensity level of playing for the Seattle Sounders, playing for Vancouver Whitecaps, is a joke compared to almost anywhere overseas. It doesn't have to be a top five league. It doesn't have to be, I don't know, it could be the second division of Poland, okay, is more competitive with the framing I just provided, which is the important framing, than here in MLS. So the English Championship, oh my God, of course, it's way better than MLS. Are you fucking kidding me? It doesn't matter that if you got the quote-unquote best MLS team. Let's say Inter Miami, Messi still is very good, Rodrigo de Paul, they have Casemiro. Let's say they can go to the English Championship. First off, I am of a strong opinion that they would be fighting relegation, okay? But let us assume that they wouldn't. Let us assume that they'd be a mid-table English Championship team. The way you have to compete there is outrageously higher than over here, Benny. So for their development, to answer Marquis's question here, it is phenomenal for this move, for this player's development. No question about it.
The first real competitive games that they ever played was the World Cup. Before that, there was zero pressure. Zero pressure, you want to do good. You want to, you know, be a starter. But zero pressure in terms of, hey, if we don't win today, we're getting relegated to the next league.
Or other national team. Yeah, or other national team matches too.
Sure, yeah. But, yeah, man, I think it's a great move for them, dude. Every single day, every single game, they are fighting for their life, fighting for their job. And if they don't perform, out. You're done. All right, Gary, shall we move on to MLS's brilliant marketing?
Yes, this is the target MLS demographic. I've been telling you guys for years. This is their prime demographic. What do I mean by that? I mean, MLS's target customer is not me. It's not you, Ben. It's not serious, hardcore soccer people. It's not soccer first heritages. It's not us, because we can see right through the facade and we reject it. And if we don't see right through the facade immediately, it's only a matter of time. I mean, I'm actually embarrassed to say it took me over a decade to recognize the farce that is MLS. It took me forever, Benny. And I've been in soccer my entire life. So we're not for them. And we number in the millions. I need to remind people. We number in the millions in this country. So who do they go after instead? They go after people who don't know any better. Non-soccer people. That's their primary demographic. It doesn't mean that there aren't soccer people in MLS. There are, but that's not the target customer. This is the target customer. And not to mention all the ancillary things that I could be saying about this unfortunate group of people who have, it's none of their fault, you know, that they're highlighted this way. This is just who they are, but I'm sure the audience can see the stereotypes that exist there. And I could rattle off the stereotypes from physical appearance, from their apparel, from the things that they're saying. I don't have to say it, do I? So this is what you're dealing with. And real soccer people wouldn't be caught dead sharing the stands with these folks. I would immediately leave. This is a clown show. I can't imagine. I have to fucking stand next to these people to watch what is supposed to be a football match. I would die. And I have died many a times. I've given the countless examples of being at MLS matches, again, since 1996, mind you, I've been to fucking thousands or God knows how many, where I'm sitting there and the guy behind me is talking about the Raiders match. And the guy to the left of me or the girl next to me is talking about shopping for her daughter's prom dress, you know, with her friend. And, oh, yeah, they're going to prom together. Oh, yeah. Did you meet Johnny? He seems like a good guy. And the game's fucking happening. Right. Or the guy to the right of me is on his phone, you know, doing so. God knows what. And the people in front of me are standing up and going to get hot dogs and nachos and beers and stuff. And the game's fucking happening. This is MLS. This is not football. This is not football culture. So one more thing, Benny, I'm actually happy that this thing came out too, because it kind of gives us the perfect avatar for what I've been talking about forever. And I'm also encouraged by how much backlash this thing got by so many people in the American soccer ecosystem, kind of mocking this scenario. Hey, is it good marketing? I don't know. The video probably got millions of views, so they got a lot of attention out of this. And attention, I mean, it could be considered good either way it goes. So maybe it translates to good marketing. But I'll tell you this much, a lot of people here in American soccer saw that and it was cringe as fuck.
Yeah, but for MLS, Gary, it doesn't matter because this video is reaching the people that they want it to reach, right?
Totally.
Because somebody will see this and they're like, oh, wow, like that looks kind of fun.
Maybe I'm going to
bring my son to this game and, you know, let's go find those people. They look like they're having a great time there. And listen, I told you this yesterday. I don't blame these people on the video. I mean, they don't know any better. They don't know what a real soccer culture is. This is just what is offered, I'm assuming, in their hometown. Yeah, man, I don't know. It is cringe to watch. Here's a good question from the audience, Gary. Doesn't a soccer heritage have to start somewhere?
This is I appreciate the question. Okay, let me start with that. But this is unfortunately what so many people have been indoctrinated with, is this framing. We already have soccer heritages here in this country where there's millions of us comprised of Argentinians, Colombians, Paraguayans, Italians, French, Spaniards, English, etc. You name it. Deeply ingrained soccer heritages numbering in the millions are already here, but we're not allowed to participate and be included, involved, and earn our way up. We're suppressed. If we show our passion for this sport, our soccer heritages, it is not only just frowned upon, we are systematically blackballed and erased from the ecosystem. So, and what this framing with this question does is it ignores all of that as if it doesn't exist. And puts in your head, we're starting from zero here. And so since we're starting from zero here, these are the types of people you get. That's not true. We don't have to have this. We could have a real soccer culture. But what these people say, these people in the video here, that the avatar of these people, okay? They will say we are in the process of developing the soccer culture. And guess what? They want it to be their culture who's in control. I don't know if that helps. I get blue in the face talking about this over and over and over again because the establishment has indoctrinated so many people to think that we don't have soccer heritage.
But what about for the people that are first in their family to watch soccer and support soccer and want to learn more about it? I mean, doesn't that heritage have to start somewhere, Gary?
But look at who they're learning from. They're learning from these folks in the video. That is what they think soccer in this country is.
Here's another one. This is American sports culture in general. The game is often just background noise for what is more of a social gathering.
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, actually. Yes. And interestingly enough, this is tied closely with what Pochettino said, his quote of American sports breeds losers because there is no hardcore intensity or passion or accountability surrounding it. So yeah, I agree. This is American sports culture in general. I will tell you this much. It's not as bad as this video, though. You go to NFL matches, you go to, I don't know, college sports or college football, I would presume, or you go to, I don't know, other things other than professional soccer, go to the other professional sports. I don't think it's as cringe as this shit. This takes the cake. This is comprised of people who are basically can't fit into those other sporting cultures. And so they default to this one because this one creates a nice, soft, pussy-ass, bitch-ass environment for them to survive in. And the other ones don't.
I would say that college football is probably the closest to having a proper culture in this country. But you're like the students, I mean, Gary. No? Would you agree?
Yeah, yeah, but I understand this person's comment is that, well, even the students or whatever, and they're watching the college football match, they're still talking to each other and the game's happening in front of them and they're not really paying attention like hardcore football people in the English championship are paying attention.
Let's see here. There's add another one. You can't have lame Reddit neck beard dorks leading your soccer culture. You need ghetto people. You need everyday blue collar workers. You need fans who yell curse words and banter. Unfortunately, those people aren't allowed to rise in this country, are they, Gary?
We're not allowed. We're not allowed because that culture that's being described holds people accountable and they're extremely competitive and they would not put up with the stupid shit that MLS and its franchises, its separate offices get away with. They would not allow it to happen. So what does MLS need? It needs people who are neutered eunuchs to be their customers because they'll just obey and go along with anything.
How about this guy? I know you touched on it a little bit, but it's a little bit different. There's no such thing as soccer heritage in the U.S. when a franchise can be uprooted from a city and planted on another.
Yeah, it's not allowed to, well, it's not allowed to manifest itself. But my point is we have a huge population of people with soccer heritage in the country, but it's not allowed to coalesce and rise and be the dominant force. And this is one example why it's not, how it's not allowed to rise and be a dominant force because of the franchise system where they can just uproot a franchise, shut it down, go somewhere else or whatever. Okay. So then what happens to all of us who were there supporting that presumed club? You're gone again.
So Gary, I know I've asked you this 1,000 times and you've talked about this 1,000,000 times. How do we change this culture and how do we get a real soccer culture? I mean, I know that we have it, but I'm saying to get everybody on board, how do we change this, Gary, so that we don't have to see any more of those MLS videos?
More education. We need a critical mass of people who are educated. And then with the education comes further resistance and objection and boycotting of the existing establishment. And with that then empowers the U.S. soccer executives or board members or whatever. They'll now feel empowered that even if they were to oppose the establishment, we have the public kind of supporting us. The public is giving us the impetus to do things that move the needle in the direction that it needs to be moved. Versus right now, there isn't a mass support for those executives who have voting power in the Federation to do things right. What they are mostly incentivized to do is bend the knee, kiss the ring, and do everything MLS wants. That is how we change it. More education. So I implore everybody who listens here, who's been with us for a very long time, who is really starting to appreciate or fully understands what we've been discussing for a very long time, especially the practitioners, go out to your circles. It doesn't matter if your circle is only 10 people and educate your circles about this situation and do it systematically over the course of time because they're not going to get in one shot. I know this very well. Over the course of months and years. And then those people will inform their circles and so on and so forth. So we have a viral infection. Actually, I don't want to call it a viral infection. I want to call it a cure. Okay. To the cancer that plagues us.
It took me years, Gary. I mean, yeah. I started working with you in what, 2017? And yeah, 2018, 2019, I'm still going to Galaxy games thinking like, I get what Gary's saying, but nah, like that's not true. And then little by little, you start to open your eyes. But Gary, speaking of getting good education, give the audience a preview of what our plan is moving forward in regards to our live streams and current events.
Yeah. I think so. You know, Benny and I made this decision. I think it's important for us to have weekly live streams like this on YouTube, like the ones that we've been doing. I always have, you know, we started 343 in 2009 with me just writing blog posts and articles systematically about all this sort of stuff and coaching education and all that. And then in 2013, we uploaded a video to YouTube. And then in 2014, we started the company, coaching education, whatever. And I always rejected doing current events and reporting the news and having, you know, opinions about the news. I thought that was just very stupid and a waste of time. And to a large degree, it is, because if you're a builder, such as myself, you want to build things. You want to build products. You want to build services. You want to make the world a better place by bringing something that doesn't exist into existence that will help people. So that is what I've been on forever. And I'm a builder. That's what I'm going to continue doing. However, I think I've also recognized, to the point where I'm at today, that the news, reporting on the news, is important for us to do also, because it helps people who listen to us immunize them against the monolithic narrative that goes out every single day with the news cycle and indoctrinates people every single day to support the establishment one way or another. So we need to combat that somehow, Ben. So I think it's irresponsible of us to not at least try to help people combat that indoctrination. So every week we're going to go live on YouTube. I think we settled on Mondays, right? Mondays at 5 p.m. Pacific. Is that what we said?
Yep. 5 p.m. Pacific.
So Monday, every Monday, 5 p.m. Pacific, we will collect, or Benny rather, will collect, you know, 2-3 of the main stories perhaps that have happened in American soccer during the week. And we'll come in and give you our view of it through our lens, through our framing, because you're not going to get it elsewhere. You're going to get a completely 180 degree take from the reporters of American soccer who are fully compromised and corrupt. So that'll be Mondays, guys. But we will still record, Benny and I will still record our non-live episodes, but those will deal more with things that are not news related, not current events, even though there might be a little bit mixture. Those will deal more with coaching education, player development, the ecosystem as a whole, you know, how you can improve your own situation, how you can navigate your situations, whether you're a parent, a coach, a media person, a business owner, whatever.
Looking forward to you guys. And guys, I would recommend go on X, go on Instagram, follow us at 343. We post every day. That way you guys don't miss anything. We appreciate you guys, man. Let's see. Wait. New subscriber here found a live of you guys this week. Would you all be open for a collab in the future?
I mean, we're open to collabs. It's just, we're very selective in what we do, because look, how many guests do I have on the show over the, we have over 400 episodes at this point, 440 episodes. How many guests have been on the show, especially ever since I started hosting the whole thing and producing the whole thing along with Benny? Not that many. And the reason isn't that we're not open to contrarian views or opposing views. It has nothing to do with that. It's that you guys already get all those views 99% of the time out in the wild. Why bring those people over here and contaminate, you know, the alternative view, which I believe is the correct view? It's very tough. And further, we want to collab with people or have guests on or whatever who are practitioners, who bring deep subject matter expertise and have that sort of angle. Not that that is exclusive, because I would like to talk to folks out in the trenches who may not be practitioners. Let's say there's a parent, they have a 12-year-old kid, they've never coached, but whatever, they're having experiences too. And we could learn some things from their experiences. The audience can learn some things from their experiences. So I'm not closed off to that. All that to answer this question, are we open to collab? I mean, yes, but, oh, one more thing. If I wanted to grow the channel and get so much more viewers and audience, and that translates to business and make more money, I would just fucking, I don't know, do everything under the sun, even collab with people that are corrupt, people that I think are jokers, but they have a big audience. Oh, I'll collab with him because he has 70,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. He's a schmuck who doesn't know anything, but I'll do it because it'll bring more audience to me and more money to me. I'm not going to do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, you'd be having weekly Fridays with Hercules Gomez.
Fuck me. Put a bullet in my head, man.
All right, guys. Gary, as always, we appreciate your time. Audience, thank you for being here. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your weekend. Until next time. We'll see you guys on Monday, actually. So in a couple of days.
All right. Thanks, guys. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.